Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this interview with IBM's Chief Software Economist, Walker Royce. My name's Neil Ward-Dutton, and I'm Research Director at MWD Advisors, an industry analyst and advisory firm that provides practical, independent industry insights that show how leaders create tangible business improvements from IT investments. Now, Walker and I are here today to talk about the practice of software econometrics, challenging our assumptions about software delivery. In our interview, which is split into two podcast episodes, of which this is the first, we'll look at what software econometrics is, why it's important, and what you really need to do about it. In this first part, we're going to explore what software econometrics is and what its practical implications are. And in the second part, you can hear us continue our conversation as we talk about specific software delivery metrics that are important and some insights from specific customer engagements and some practical steps you can take to get started with software econometrics. So, Walker, firstly, welcome and thanks very much for taking the time to join us.
Hi, Neil. Nice talking with you this morning.
Hi there. So, first of all, what I'd really like to ask you, Walker, you know, your job title, Chief Software Economist, that's a fantastic title within IBM. What do you actually do in that role? Can you talk a bit about what that role encompasses, and hopefully that will then lead us into the rest of the conversation?
Sure. It is a cool title. So we need to make complex things simpler, and this is especially true for something that is as complex as transforming software delivery results into improved business outcomes. Now, my job is to take the lessons we've all learned through decades of experience and try to abstract them into some simple models that more people can understand and use. So when I first took this job, we laid out two critical responsibilities. First is to provide some thought leadership in software measurement and measured improvement. The industry needs some standards and benchmarks for measurably improving their software capability. And so that's really my mainstream job. The second thing is to improve the clarity of our value proposition and also help our clients develop stronger, more credible business cases for their measured improvement initiatives. So I consult with many of our more significant clients to help diagnose the right transformation targets and to learn from their experience the patterns of success and failure. So that's my job.
Right. So I'm kind of intrigued by how you describe that. You know, just briefly, I mean, it sounds quite scientific. Is it a very scientific kind of practice that you do day-to-day, or is there a kind of softer element to it as well?
Well, I wish there was more science, but most of it is empirical, experiential-based learning and setting patterns of success and patterns of failure, and then trying to, you know, use mathematics and science and economics to make it more objective and build a more credible foundation.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. So I think that's a great lead-in then to, you know, let's kind of crystallize this idea of software econometrics just so that we have a common kind of language and context to work from in the rest of our conversation. So can you explain to the people listening to this, is there a kind of crisp definition of the practice of software econometrics? Could you share that with us?
Okay, I'll try. I guess, you know, software econometrics is really the measurement foundation underlying, you know, improving productivity. And that, of course, is the core practice underlying all modern agile methods that we've been advancing for decades. Now, right. Improvement in software delivery productivity is, frankly, rational's identity. It's a powerful identity, and it's really been what we've done for many decades. And customers are willing to pay dearly for improved productivity. And, you know, why? Well, if you think of it, improved productivity is, and that's really what the this foundation of econometrics helps us reason about, improved productivity is more or better output per dollar, or euro, pound, yen, won,
right,
however you want to measure it. And these improvements can be channeled into business value in many dimensions: cost savings, better quality, earlier time to market, more predictable delivery, enhanced market reputation, even greener operations. So, you know, really econometrics is sort of the measurement practice underneath improving productivity.
Right, right, okay. So that actually springs a question in my mind about, you mentioned different currencies, but a question in my mind about people's maybe historical expectations about how they might improve productivity by giving the work to other people to do in different parts of the world. Maybe we'll come back to that in a second if we have time. But so, you know, let's try and follow a kind of linear path here. So I think that really nicely defines the practice. If I understand correctly, it's about a measurement foundation for improving productivity, which is, as you said, you know, it's better output for your spending. So I guess that kind of simple equation, you know, more for less almost, or maybe more for the same, is going to mean different things to different organizations, right? Not everyone has exactly the same goals they're aiming towards. So, you know, in terms of the kind of practical implications for the kinds of businesses that you've consulted with, how does that kind of break down? How you know, in practical sort of day-to-day terms, how are those organizations maybe looking to gain or able to gain from developing such a practice?
Okay, you're definitely right. The amount and the number of contexts we have to deal in is very broad, and improving productivity can take on many different meanings. But at its most abstract level, it's doing or creating more value for less resource. Now, more value may translate into quality in some domains, or features in others, or performance, or something else that's valuable to our customers. And less may translate into many things as well. It may be less scrap and rework, less waste, less time getting things done earlier, less costs, less price, even cost and price being different, or with less expertise or less people. And that's where, you know, back to the question you just asked, we may be able to allocate jobs to people and outsource them differently if we can, you know, make the value equation work. So the productivity of software development within almost every system, product, and application has become the crux of economic success for almost every organization. And that's where this econometrics practice is coming from. With good core measures and measurement discipline, a business can do much better steering and manage the uncertainties we're all faced with in our economic world and in the products we develop.
Right, right, okay. So, you know, I know that you've been, very active in the field of software delivery for a good period of time. And although my experience is nowhere near as long as yours, I have some heritage in this area. And certainly my more limited experience, the challenge is that there's actually quite a big reality gap between where we ideally want to be and where many organizations are, even some organizations that, as an outsider, you might expect would really have this nailed. When you start to take things apart, you see that, wow, actually, there's some stuff going on here I really didn't expect. So could we just sort of dig into that gap a little bit? What I'd love to understand is, from the research you've done with clients and out there in industry, what do you think that gap looks like? And I know it's a bit of a tricky question because different organizations will be better in some areas than others, and different people have different strengths. But are there any kind of commonalities you can pull out about the way that organizations typically carry out their software delivery work? And and how what that means for the journey that they need to take to really get to an improved state. What are the kind of key things that you notice where those gaps are?
So probably the biggest gap is not knowing what to do or what to change, but actually executing on it and having the discipline and the guts to really, you know, implement these new practices that we know can deliver better, but force us to make culture changes in our organization.
Right.
And it's very counterintuitive because the software delivery world is one of very high uncertainty, far more uncertainty than, say, traditional engineering methods, and yet we still use the traditional project management methods in trying to manage software. And we found that, you know, they just don't work as well because software is much more of a creative discipline akin to, you know, building a big movie production rather than building a giant bridge or other civil engineering project. And that amount of creativity required to build a giant piece of intellectual property forces us to, you know, manage uncertainties much more honestly than we have in, you know, traditional engineering disciplines.
Right. So the question that kind of immediately springs to my mind from that, Walker, is, did those engineering kind of approaches and methods, did they ever work? Was it ever the case that you could build software like you build a big ship or a tower block? Or has it always been the case that it's been more akin to kind of movie making? I've got my own opinions, but what's your view with your experience?
Well, it has worked. It just worked very infrequently. And you know, there's lots of numbers out there, but when we apply engineering management methods to software projects that have a lot of uncertainty and require creativity, the general success rate is about 1 in 10. However, if you look at where most of our mainstream best practices and new techniques, whether you call them iterative development or agile methods or whatever, most of them came from projects that were managed with an engineering mindset. But what we've seen is those folks figured out how to essentially run a project with two sets of books. One, you know, with the standard engineering waterfall model mentality that they ran with their stakeholders. But a second set of books managed by the engineering team who realized, if we don't attack these uncertainties, you know, underneath our normal management process via early prototyping or building executable demonstrations or early test cases or whatever they may be, kind of the modern best practices we have now, will never succeed. So we have seen projects succeed with that engineering mentality and waterfall model management techniques, but they did it by executing differently and explicitly addressing the risks they had in the software implementation and taking on the hard parts first, and that's very hard.
Right, right. So that's interesting. Because people quite often talk about kind of, skunkworks projects or kind of shadow structures and shadow technology groups and so on. And it sounds to me that your assertion is that, you know, even historically where ostensibly those kind of very structured engineering methods were applied successfully, those things were going on underneath, which helped to make sure that ultimately the outcome was achieved.
Exactly.
Right. Right. Okay. So, I mean, just following that thought on then and developing that a bit further, one of the things I just noted down there, where you talked about, you know, one of the keys is to be prepared to manage uncertainty and talk about it much more explicitly and transparently. So, you know, digging into that a little, what are the kind of key implications? Kind of how does that break down for the way that software delivery needs to be resourced and structured? So, you know, we're talking about, the nuts and bolts of different stakeholder groups and let's say between the people who do the development, the architects, between the maybe those groups and the kind of in quotes customers. How does that kind of the importance of managing that uncertainty more transparently. How does that break down in terms of those organizational dynamics? What are the kind of key features that the organization should really be looking to kind of foster?
Okay, that's a very tough question, but let me throw out some very stark judgments, and I sort of intend to hit some nerves with these, both positive and negative. But in my view, there's a few really critical big differentiators in improving the collaboration of teams and realizing a more efficient process that really tackles the uncertainties inherent in software development. So there's a few things that come to mind. So first, and I'll try and be pretty brief, each of these we could probably spend an hour going into in detail, but let's just summarize. So when it comes to planning, you got to lay out your milestones, activities, and interim checkpoints so that the activities of integration take precedence over the activities of unit test completion and coverage. Now, if you think about that, that's just doing the hard parts first. In other words, understanding the architecturally significant issues before focusing on all the precision of the components built within that. This is how you can best manage uncertainty, and this is very counter to the existing culture out there. So that's the first kind of big idea. The second one, and this is a key theme underlying all agile methods, is you drive all milestones and measurements from increments of demonstrable functionality. Now, if you think about that, in the software world, the only factual progress and quality metrics that we found are derived from executable software. Everything else, specifications, models, documents, plans, are guesswork and speculation. So facts come from executable software. Everything else is kind of an estimate or a plan or a forecast. And so you want to look to drive all your metrics from the factual things, namely executable software baselines that are evolving over time. So that's the second kind of big idea. Now, if we take that a little deeper, to measure the agility of the evolving products, and you can think of agility as being defined as your ability to change or react to changing circumstances, the trends in costs of change are the true measure of agility. And that's true of both the architecture and the process. So we've got to measure the cost of change over time, and that's where a lot of our econometrics basis come from. Okay, so there's three. Couple others come to mind here real briefly. Requirements, right? That's probably the most misused word in our industry. Almost nothing in a software project is really required. Almost everything is negotiable. So building
physical options instead.
Excuse me?
So they should be called options instead, maybe.
Yes, they should.
Right.
But probably the number one failure pattern in our industry is when projects try and build a 5-digit of precision version of the requirements when they only have a 1-digit of precision understanding of what the user really wants or needs. And this false precision translates into a stifling amount of future scrap and rework.
Right.
And then, you know, the last thing I'd say is if you combine all these things, you know, the biggest uncertainties in most software projects are in the architectural trade-offs. And the way to expose those uncertainties and deal with them first is through another theme of modern agile methods, which is continuous integration.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully those four or five things really capture the big nuggets of making the cultural transition to more efficient, productive organizational changes in your software capability.
Okay, fantastic. Well, that's been a really great kind of introductory session, I think, around the practice of software econometrics, and certainly I found it really fascinating. But at this point, we're going to, just for the really for the sake of time and to make these things digestible, we're going to close part one now. So thanks very much, Walker, for the great discussion so far. In this podcast episode, you've been listening to me, Neil Ward-Dutton, Research Director at MWD Advisors, interview IBM's Chief Software Economist, Walker Royce. Please take the time to locate the second part of this interview and listen to it. In this second episode, we're going to continue this conversation and talk about specific software delivery metrics that are important that Walker's really uncovered through his research, some insights from specific customer engagements, and some practical steps that you can take to get started with this practice of software econometrics. So thanks very much for listening.